and we don't believe those. We automatically assign those as fiction because we say that can't possibly have happened. If you read about heroes going out to slay dragons and things like that, you don't look at that and think, oh, that's a documentary. That described what really happened back then. And those are fun pieces of entertainment, but we don't take them seriously. And today, you have books and you have movies about different types of things that happen that's outside the realm of our normal experience, whether it's Harry Potter and witchcraft, or whether you're watching shows that have the wizards and you do go out and fight dragons. You see a lot of those things, but you just automatically assign that into the column of okay, that's fiction. But a lot of people do that with the Bible, and they say, well, this has fantastic stories about people being raised from the dead and about things happening that can't possibly happen, so therefore it's fiction. And therefore it's just a made-up story like so many of the other books that we read from a long time ago. Sometimes, because of this, you'll see documentaries on TV, and I've watched some of them, where you get experts on the documentary and they try to explain what really happened during the miracles that happened in the Bible. Whether, you know, it's the crossing of the Red Sea is a favorite one, or all of the different plagues and the things that happened. And they'll go through and they'll explain each one, you know, the water in the Nile turning to blood, and so then that killed off a lot of the marine life in there because, you know, there was some kind of red mineral that got into the water, and so then that killed fish, and that attracted flies, which attracted frogs to eat the flies, and, you know, there was a kind of a chain reaction there. And even if that was done in a natural way, it doesn't explain how Moses knew that that was going to happen and could accurately predict each one. And then it finishes up with the Red Sea. And it's like, well, you know, this was a time of year whenever the Red Sea was low and, you know, it was no big deal. They could just kind of walk across on different paths and things like that. And in fact, I heard a story where there was a guy explaining to this old farmer one time, the farmer was talking about the crossing of the Red Sea, and the expert went through a great deal of effort to explain to him how at the time whenever they crossed it, you know, the Red Sea was only going to be like 4 feet deep. And the old farmer said, "Praise God." And he's like, "I just explained to you how this wasn't a miracle." He said, "No, praise God that God could drown all those Egyptians in 4 feet of water." But we look at those miracles in a completely different way than the world does. Whenever you watch a magician today, you know, you know it's not real. You know it's fiction, and we automatically realize that. And it may look astounding at first, but the reality behind magicians is those tricks are a whole lot simpler than what you first imagine that they are. That whenever you look at it, in fact, I saw a documentary one time, and it just went through and explained all of the different magicians' tricks, and it kind of pulled the veil away, and in fact, it kind of ruined it for me. It's some of the things are so obvious. Whenever David Copperfield or whoever it was made the Statue of Liberty disappear that time, you know, essentially all they did, and the whole audience was in on the trick because they could see what was going on, and all it did was they kind of had this rotating platform, and it kind of turns it a little bit, and then they open up the curtains, and the Statue of Liberty is gone, you know. But yeah, it takes the magic away whenever you see how things really work. So the real question is, should we do that with the Bible? You know, explain it away, or can we take those miracles at face value? And so that's what we're going to talk about today. Any thoughts before we start? Anything that you're thinking about with it? I saw several news stories just this week where there were archaeological discoveries of cities mentioned in the Bible that hadn't been found before and people had doubted the existence of, and then they found them. They found inscriptions that had names of people in the Bible on some of these. And it is interesting how that confirms it. Yes, Chuck. And don't misunderstand what I'm saying here. I'm not trying to portray that this is science versus the Bible, because it's not the case. In many cases, science does confirm things that have happened in the Bible. And so that's not really the issue here. But it is an important question that we're asking. Because when science is looking at things, they go in with the idea that there's a natural explanation. Because in our normal everyday life, there is a natural explanation for the things that we encounter every day. We don't encounter a lot of miracles these days, and so the things that we see happen for a reason. It may seem like a miracle to us sometimes that something happened, and it may be God's providence, but there's not a whole lot of people actually being raised from the dead today. When people are dead, they're dead. And so science automatically rejects the idea of bringing somebody back from the dead, unless they've just been resuscitated, you restart their heart or something like that. But other than that, people assume that. Yes?
And then miracles did happen. You see, I always thought the miracle of birth. Well, there's no miracle of birth. It's a natural action plan that God has put in place. And so we need to make sure we talk right. Talking right means something. And it should mean something to us. Because when the Bible speaks, as you mentioned earlier, we need to take those things at face value. We have no other proof than what's written. And we need to accept that. We don't need to question why or how. when and any of that. All we need to do is accept.
Mm-hmm. We do. But the people that we're talking to don't automatically.
No.
They don't have a reason yet to accept the Bible at face value. Yes.
No. Well, if you believe that that happened, right? How do you know that happened?
Mm-hmm.
Well, because historians told us that it happened.
Mm-hmm.
It's eyewitness testimony. What's the difference between that and this?
And there is a process by which you evaluate old books and writings, and scholars do that all the time, and they'll decide whether this was a work of fiction or whether it was... There was a story that kind of took some facts and improved them to make a better story, and that happens a lot in old books. You can't just read a book from 1,000 years ago and assume everything in it is perfectly accurate without looking at a lot of different factors, looking at the writer and the context and the audience, you know, the purpose of why the book was written. Some things, and part of it is, did the writer witness the events that they were writing about, or are they writing hundreds of years after the fact? Because you find that's the case with a lot of ancient writings. And we're going to get into some of that in just a few minutes. But the idea is, we accept that God is real, and scientists are looking for a natural explanation. And it's just two different viewpoints of whenever you're looking at any situation. And so, because you're looking at it from a different way, if you accept the fact going in that God is real, if you have already found enough evidence in your own life and in the world around you that God is real, then it's not a stretch for us to accept the miracles, because if God is real, and if He created the earth and the universe around us, then the miracles that are written about in the Bible are very easy to accept. Any God that can create the universe can certainly turn water into wine or raise somebody from the dead, somebody that they created originally anyway. So that's not really, it's not violating science. Miracles are outside science. There was an Old Testament story where there was an axe head that floated on the water. Axe heads don't float on water.
No.
And so that's outside our normal experience. And that's something that requires supernatural involvement in order for that to happen. And so if you accept the fact that God does things for a reason, then you can accept the fact that these miracles happen. They're not a violation of science. They're just happening because God intervened in what ordinarily would have happened. It's like if you're outside and an apple falls from the tree, gravity makes it fall. And so you normally assume it's going to hit the ground. If you reach out and catch the apple on its way down, is that a miracle? That, you know, what was supposed to happen didn't happen, but it's because you intervened. You stopped something from happening that otherwise would have. And that's what's happening in the case of the biblical miracles, is that everything didn't happen the way it normally should have, because God's the one that designed the laws of gravity, of physics, of biology. He's the one that established all these principles to begin with. So if He designed them, He's perfectly capable of intervening and changing them for a specific event. So people don't normally rise from the dead, but if God chooses for a specific person to rise from the dead, that's within His power to do so. But it requires that you believe in God initially, and once you do, then the miracles are simple. And so we don't have to provide a normal, natural way for the miracles to have happened, because we accept the fact they didn't happen in a normal, natural way. And there are times whenever God interferes in things going on, but He does this through natural means that are around us. You know, there are cases whenever you can look at things in the Bible and say, okay, this did happen in a natural way, even though it was God's will. He made something happen, but He made it happen through the efforts of a person. You know, it was it took a supreme act in order to change Paul's direction in his life. And it was a combination of some supernatural things and then some natural things. You know, Ananias, went and helped in Paul's conversion do some of the things that humans needed to be there to do. And that part wasn't miraculous, him going and baptizing Paul or anything. But Paul being blinded on the way to Damascus was a supernatural portion of that story. So at times God intervenes on what ordinarily would have happened. And so, you know, if you're watching the news and your lottery numbers came up, you're like, it's a miracle, I won the lottery. Well, it's not really a miracle, it's, you know, statistics. It was extremely unlikely that you would win the lottery, but it's not impossible. So if you accept the fact that the news normally reports the correct numbers, then you say, that's not a miracle. It's highly improbable, but it's not a miracle. And so, that, you know, that may be the way that some people look at things that happened in the Bible. It is highly improbable unless you assume that God specifically wanted something to happen. So if you look, for example, at the resurrection of Jesus, you know, this is probably the pinnacle of all of the miracles in the Bible, if you want to look at it that way. That or possibly arguing the parting of the Red Sea, I guess. You know, both of those are very visible miracles. That there is no question that this couldn't happen except through supernatural involvement. The Romans were very good at crucifying people. And that was one thing they had down to a science, was how to kill people. And they knew how to do that. So Jesus wasn't ordinarily going to survive that execution that he went through. So that pretty much had to be a miracle if it occurred. So what we look at is, did it occur? So if it did occur, that means miracles did occur and miracles could occur at that time. And so it was like Russ said, there's some evidence in there that we can look at within the Bible and even outside the Bible in some cases. You know, like the wedding at Cana, that was a miracle that accomplished. It was accomplished around people that weren't Jesus' disciples. The servants that saw the water changed into wine, they weren't believers, at least not before that time. Maybe they were afterward, but we don't really have that record, but they weren't Jesus' apostles. They had no reason to lie about this situation, but they were like, hey, this is different. This is not what I normally expected to happen. They can kind of verify the story. So, you know, more than 5,000 people witnessed, you know, feeding that crowd with loaves and fishes. So those were people that could verify the authenticity. And that's what Russ was saying earlier. The Gospels, unlike a lot of ancient texts, were written in the lifetimes of the eyewitnesses. People that ordinarily would have been able to say, no, this didn't happen, they made this up. Like a lot of the other old stories. You know, sometimes you write about fantastic things that a person did, and the person's like, I was there. This didn't happen. You made this up. But that didn't happen. There were a lot of witnesses to these miracles that had no vested interest in vouching for this. And so the Jewish leaders, they couldn't deny that Lazarus was raised from the dead. They accepted it. It's like, okay, this happened. He was dead, and now he's alive. We don't have an explanation for it, but you know, they were just in damage control mode at that point. So they didn't deny that a miracle had happened. They just weren't sure why or how that it happened, but they knew it happened. So they didn't deny it. So, you know, there's a context here initially. Jesus had a record of performing miracles around unbelievers in each of these cases that we mentioned. So this kind of sets a context for him being raised from the dead. This was at a time when God was choosing to perform some miracles. And there were various times in history whenever God did choose to perform some miracles. There were times in the Old Testament, and there were times in the New Testament that he did. So, and Jesus even predicted that he was going to rise from the dead. He'd already said in advance that he was going to. So with that being said, he's already set the idea in people's minds, this is going to happen. And, you know, he's like, I've performed miracles in the past. I'm paraphrasing, obviously. I perform miracles, so you know that what I'm saying can come true. And I'm telling you, I'm going to die and I'm going to raise from the dead. So they didn't understand. They thought he was speaking metaphorically at the time. They weren't expecting things to happen the way that it really did. So how do we know that that resurrection happened? You know, that's the question. If we can prove that the resurrection happened, we've got no reason to doubt any other miracle in the Bible, because that one would be as difficult to perform as any other miracle in the Bible. But there were a lot of miracles. You know, first of all, there were the apostles. I'm sorry, man.
No, you asked the question, how do you know that the miracle happened? But Christ being resurrected from the dead, well, as Russ mentioned earlier, they have a written proof that it happened.
Mm-hmm.
These men wrote about it.
Right.
And the people that crucified them know that it happened because mm-hmm. they did it.
Yep.
And so we know it for a fact.
Mm-hmm.
And even someone who was not a Christian, we could show them that on me.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll read it and hopefully they'll, it's just a fact that I did it.
Mm-hmm.
That it's too bad.
Yeah. But what we're talking about is people who are skeptical right now. They've already decided they think that the Bible is a work of fiction, and so we're talking to them. And we're trying to teach them the gospel, but they've got this stumbling block of they say, I don't think these miracles really happen. So what we're discussing today is how do we convince somebody that doesn't accept it at face value?
Well, the book of the Bible is a proof text. One scripture proves another.
Mm-hmm.
And what we have to do is show them where the Bible is right.
Mm-hmm.
Not that the Bible is wrong, but that the Bible is right.
Mm-hmm.
And show them that you can look like the Old Testament, but it talks about the miracle that's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
One of the biggest scriptures, we read it sometimes, but it's doing all the stuff. It is Isaiah 53, when it talks about Jesus Christ and his coming and his suffering,
mm-hmm.
and his dying on the cross and being raised from the dead.
Mm-hmm.
Then you go over to, you go to Matthew, Mark, Luke, and the Bible,
mm-hmm.
and it talks about Christ's death. Being hung on the cross, being conceived,
mm-hmm.
and of course, as we know the story, one of the asked the Lord to give him, and the Lord said, "In this day, you will be with me in what is it?" And you want to be with them.
Mm-hmm.
And you show that to them. Hebrews and other places were talked about Christ.
Yeah, and the prophecies coming true is one way to verify it. And so what we're looking at today is how can we verify these miracles in the same way that you talked about with the prophecy. And, of course, the apostles witnessed the resurrection, but they're not exactly unbiased observers. And so if you're trying to convince somebody the miracles occurred, the fact that the apostles say they witnessed it, it's probably not the best proof. We know that they did, but we also know that they were biased. But not everybody that witnessed it was biased. Some people were impartial. In fact, James, Jesus' brother, he wasn't a believer before Jesus rose from the dead. We read in Mark 3:21 that Jesus' own family, they kind of appeared to be a little bit embarrassed about the way that Jesus was acting and the things that he was doing. And they were kind of like, Jesus, won't you come on back home here and stop all of this that you're doing. But we read in 1 Corinthians 15:7 that after James, the brother of Jesus, witnessed Jesus' resurrection, that changed his life. Later on, he became the leader of the church at Jerusalem. And so that's very important. I mean, somebody that clearly wasn't a believer, and then we have the text that claims after the resurrection he clearly was a believer, that's powerful. That's good testimony. 1 Corinthians 15:6 says there were 500 people that witnessed him after he had been resurrected from the dead. And it specifically says there that most of those people were still alive at the time of the writing of this text, which was, several decades later. But it said, most of those people are still alive. But you can go back and check if you want to. You can go ask them if Jesus was still alive. So it's different than if you're writing about Alexander the Great and you're writing 400 years after he lived, because you can write anything you want. There's nobody there to verify whether those stories are true that were written. But during the time of Jesus, they were. And that's a big difference between the Gospels and a lot of other old texts is the time that they were written. There's not a lot of texts that were written from ancient texts that were written that soon after the events. And so that's one of the big ways that we can verify this, is those people who were unbelievers who had the chance to deny these events, but they didn't. They didn't question the fact that this event occurred. Mm-hmm. Right. In fact, the grave he was in was of a very famous person at the time. Joseph of Arimathea was somebody that at the time was well known. He was a rich fellow because he had enough money to buy this tomb, which is not something that you normally invest in if you've got other pressing immediate concerns for your life. But he spent a lot of money on this tomb, so he was a well-to-do guy. Everybody knew where this tomb was. Anybody that wanted to could go out and take a look to see if Jesus was in that tomb. So, some people claimed, and they even alluded to this in the Bible, that, well, maybe the apostles went and stole the body out of the tomb. That way, they could claim Jesus was risen from the dead and say, you can look at the empty tomb, and so that way they could claim it. But there's a big flaw with that theory. They didn't do this to gain fortune and fame or anything. All they gained out of this was a life of misery and most of the time of a very terrible death in the case of most of these apostles. So they didn't gain anything. If they tried to deceive people by stealing the body of Jesus, why would you spend the rest of your existence preaching this at great personal cost, and even to the point of being executed, sometimes in horrible ways, proclaiming a lie. Because that is also something that people just don't normally do. You're not usually willing to give up your entire life and die a terrible death based on a lie, because you're claiming something that is a lie. Sometimes even if you're claiming the truth, people will lie just to get out of that punishment that they're getting into.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. In other words, and primarily financial gain. You know, we have people do that all the time.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
But when you address the issue of what was it they were going to gain?
Right.
You know, what was perpetuating this lie going to get them? Not only physical death, but the reason that they perpetuated the story was to was because of what they had to look forward beyond this
right.
life. And that's some powerful evidence as to why they were holding on to that story. But there's another really interesting, compelling argument in terms of the resurrection itself, and that has to do with the Roman soldiers who were, you know, sent to guard the tomb. Now, these guys, you know, if they fall asleep on the job, they're going to be executed. That was the punishment for Roman soldiers who don't do their job. What do? They come back and tell the story. What happened to
them? Yeah, exactly. They were put there specifically for the purpose of making sure this didn't happen.
The apostles came and they overcame us. They were stronger and, you know, they were able to overcome us and they stole the body away. The Roman soldiers, you let these fishermen overcome you and take... No, that story's not going to hold very well.
Yep, that's true. And the fact that that nothing happened to these guards was a sign that they were believed when they told their story. Because ordinarily they would have just been executed right off the bat, and they weren't. So people saw that there was an issue here. Some reason to execute these soldiers normally. This was some pretty powerful evidence. There were a lot of people that saw Jesus afterward, people that had no vested interest. It's not like Peter went and became this preacher at this mega church and became very very rich the way that a lot of preachers do today, that are profiting from some of the things that they claim that aren't really true. But this isn't what happened. They gained nothing out of their preaching except misery and sorrow and eternal life. And so as Russ said, the things that they had to look forward to weren't in this life. So if they knew there wasn't life beyond this life, then why would they do all these things? Yeah.
I have a Bible that I can see you. It's very small. But it gives you in-depth information about the apostles and all of their deaths. The only one that died, not being murdered, executed, or killed, was John the Revelator. And he was probably the only one who died, the lack of a better term, a natural death.
Right.
But all of the other apostles were killed.
And went to their death still claiming that this was true.
Yeah.
And if they knew it was a lie, and all they had to do was say, okay, you got me, it was a lie, we made it all up, and this would save their life, why wouldn't they at that point? They had nothing else to gain.
They went to their death proclaiming that no thing happened. that that was a part of their story.
Yep. So
that occurred.
So whenever you evaluate these ancient texts, what you have to look for is evidence. You know, we don't have anybody alive that can verify that something happened or didn't. And so you look at the evidence. You look at the context of when it was written, and you look at verification that the stories in the text that you're reading, that they were actually true. And we have that in this case. We've got evidence that those stories actually did happen the way that they were written.
For a human, it's hard to not believe without facts. It's just human nature. It's something that, you know, you want to see facts. You want to see evidence. You want to see the things that are true, are real, are tangible. And something else that helped me, not that I didn't believe, I mean, I believe that what the Bible says is true, but something that helped me was in the Bible class at college of Civil Studies or whatever. We had a discussion of the facts around Jesus' death and resurrection. We talked about how his body was prepared and how his linens were left after he was resurrected and how they were undisturbed. And those are tangible things that help me say, okay, you know, you can't argue those things. You can't you can't find science to, you know, make it right or not make it right or whatever. So for me, I was able to make that information tangible to me to better understand it. While I had faith and hope that it really happened, to have that information and put it all together, it helped me to see this stuff is true. But to me, it was very eye-opening.
So in order to evaluate whether something's true, you have to look at a preponderance of the evidence and say, which way does the evidence point? And in the case of this miracle, the evidence points to it being that it happened the way that it was written in the book. That's the only way that really makes sense of all of the different witnesses and the testimony and the facts. Yes?
Talking to somebody who is hesitant about accepting miracles, I don't know that I believe that these miracles occur. One direction, in the course of discussing the resurrection of Jesus as the ultimate miracle, but you go back and you can start out by just talking about the person's faith. Do they believe in God, period?
Right.
Okay, if you believe in God, what do you believe about God? Is he powerful? And most people, if they have any belief in God or a deity, would say, well, yeah, he's powerful. Okay, well, how powerful is it? Okay, and try to get some, you know, some kind of a commitment as to how powerful they think God really is. Well, can God do this? Can God do that? You know?
Right.
And if they agree that God is powerful, more powerful than humans, if he's not, then why bother with
right.
a God that can't do even more than humans can?
That's true.
Okay? Well, then you've kind of got them in a situation where they have to decide, okay, are you or who is able to limit the power that God has? If you agree that God is powerful enough to do this, then how do you know he's not powerful enough to do this?
And by the way, about 85% to 90% in most polls will say they do believe in God, at least in some form or another. And so if they believe in God, it's a fairly easy leap then to say, if God exists and he is powerful, and he had a reason for accomplishing these miracles, especially the raising of Jesus, because this was the whole point, I guess, of our relationship with God was for this miracle to occur. It makes perfect sense that God would have intervened in this case and wouldn't have let a dead person stay dead. And especially given the fact that he had already raised people from the dead before, most notably Lazarus, who was well known, he'd already established the fact that he could raise somebody from the dead. So why wouldn't his father be able to raise someone from the dead who is more powerful than Jesus, if anything? So you definitely have reason to believe here. Right. That's right. Yeah, science can tell us the way things are designed to normally happen. But as we said at the beginning here, these are things that happened outside of the natural. These are times when God intervened to change what ordinarily would have happened, which is somebody who died staying dead, or other miracles. Right, and if you accept the fact that God exists, then you realize there are times whenever God may choose to intervene and to change things in a different way. We have to also accept the fact that God doesn't always choose to exercise his power. But if he does, it's for a specific reason. And it's either to increase faith or so that certain events follow that he wants to have happen. And there's plenty of evidence that God exists. We don't have time in this study to do it, but for that small percentage that don't believe in God, you really don't have to look a whole lot further than the beginning of the universe to realize that there's not really a satisfactory explanation outside of God as to how the universe could come into being. Despite all the efforts of physicists so far to come up with rational explanations, there really isn't any explanation that makes sense. And also the origin of life. It's easy to look at mutations and evolution once life exists, but you know, in spite of all the experiments, nobody's ever been able to create life from non-living matter. And no matter how favorable a laboratory conditions you set up, it just doesn't happen. You can take a living cell and puncture the cell membrane and dump all the contents into a test tube, and they just don't reassemble themselves into anything living. And so that's something else that is not explainable except by supernatural means. And having God makes sense out of moral values, too. God established right from wrong, things that people universally accept as right or wrong. And outside of a creator, there's no reason why everybody on earth would innately realize that certain things are right and wrong, unless it was something that God established and put into the consciousness of his creation, is that these things are wrong, these things are right. And most importantly, we just see God in the lives of the people around us. We see the lives that have been changed by coming to Jesus. And that's as powerful a testimony as any other that you can see. Somebody that completely turned their life around as a result of coming in contact with Jesus. So even though we have faith, it's not a blind faith. Somebody mentioned earlier, we have reason to believe the things that we do. We're not believing things because of illogical reasons. The evidence actually points to the miracles occurring as the best explanation for the things that were written in the Bible. And so it's not at all a blind faith. It's an active and a living faith that's based upon the evidence that we see. Any closing comments before we end here today? Keith, would you be willing?